Welcome to episode 325 of Words Daily's Water Cooler Podcast. I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and I'm joined by the other two M's. So M's, let's go around the cooler and tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet. Joey, we'll start with you this week.
I never know who you're going to start with. Hi, I'm Joey Moser. You can find me on Twitter at JoeyMoser83.
Keeping you on your toes. Silence is a choice. Megan?
Hi, I'm Megan McLaughlin, and you can find me on Twitter at HeyDudeMeg.
And I'm Clarence Moy again, and you can block me on Twitter at Clarence Moy. So, how is it? Sorry, it's been two weeks since I've hung out with you guys.
Yeah, how's your vacation been?
It was good. I actually had to do real world work for a while. Not real world like an MTV, but like the actual work that pays my rent.
Yeah.
This is the story of Seven Strangers.
I actually went to the beach and stayed in a house and filmed a reality show. It'd be the most boring reality show ever.
Like, guys, I have an announcement.
Cal, did you put your hand in the peanut butter again?
But it was nice. We had a good time. We were on the Outer Banks, so Nicholas Sparks land. So.
Oh,
you were in Rodanthe? Nice.
No, but we were near Rodanthe.
That was Rodanthe a real place? I was kidding.
You didn't know that?
No. Yeah.
I just know they wasted Viola Davis. That's all I know.
They did.
She was in that?
Hmm?
I didn't know
she was Diane Lane's sassy friend.
Oh. I'm so glad that she's broken out from those roles.
Speaking of black voices in cinema, every year my wife and I watch Steel Magnolias because it begins and ends in Easter. And it's the most quotable movie I think I've ever seen, or one of them. And I was watching it last night. For whatever reason, I noticed that there is only one black person with a speaking role in the entire film.
Really?
In Steel Magnolias?
Yes, which is set in Louisiana, by the way.
That is crazy. But then didn't they do an updated version of it with all women of color?
They did. They did. Yeah. For Lifetime with Felicia Rashad and
I wanted to see that. Yeah. There's so many things that, like, a Lifetime has things that I'm like, I really would like to check that out, and I just never get to. Like, then they have the one about the girl in the basement based on a true story about this father who, like, oh, this terrible story where he kept his daughter in this, like, sealed up, like, cave in the basement for years. And, ooh. Yeah, and had kids with her and stuff. It's, what? Yeah.
You know, the sad thing is I was just about to search for it, but I know if I searched Lifetime movie stuck in the basement incest with father, I would still get 3,700 different movies.
That's true.
You should ask Sasha which one it is, because she has a I don't know if you guys know this, but she has a passionate love affair for Lifetime TV movies.
I did not know that.
I did not know that.
She does.
They're
every
fun.
Now and again. Yeah, every now and again I'll tweet her something like, go check this out. It's, you know, Randy Nunn. You know, whatever. I don't know.
I prefer them to the Hallmark Christmas movies. And those Christmas movies drive me crazy. It's just the same storyline over and over again. And just different actors. Well, sometimes the same actors doing the same story, but a different location.
She's like, but I'm from the big city. I can't possibly stay here for the Christmas.
You forgot. Right. Uptight bitch goes to small town.
Yes. And has to decide whether to stay there or to move back to the big city and also save the town. From some sort of, like,
I can't walk in the snow in my Louboutins. No. I guess I'll try these cowboy boots.
The one I do like, though, is the one with, her name is escaping me right now, and I love her. She's on Pushing Daisies.
Anna Friel.
No.
Kristen Chenoweth.
Well, I've, like, had a complete brain fart. Like, I'm obsessed with her. She was in one where it's, like, the 12 men of Christmas, and it's like a calendar, and she's like a PR person who goes to Montana.
That's not gay, then it's not good.
It's so, but she ends up with the guy from Cougar Town who's very good looking. okay. I enjoyed that one. That was like 10 years ago or so, probably more than that, but it's really cute.
Okay. Well, reeling us back in from that tangent.
Right, yeah. Sorry.
No worries. Hopefully you guys have had a good week. So tonight we are going to talk about HBO Max's new show, Made for Love. So Joey is going to take us into that one because I think Joey's the best one to speak about it, and for various reasons. And But first, we're going to talk about the recent Screen Actors Guild Award nominations or awards, and talk about what the impacts those have on the Oscar and Emmy race. Says. So, are we ready to start?
Sure. Yeah.
Cool. So let's go through SAG very quickly. We don't want to spend a lot of time on this because I think there's been like 16,000 think pieces, which, by the way, we all knew the film winners. Just wanted to tell everybody that because we found out the real leak. So
that was pretty fun to know that.
That was fun. That was fun. So let's talk about TV because we did not have that information. But in the, I don't know why they can't be bothered to add one more category to have an outstanding performance by an ensemble in a limited series.
That drives me nuts.
It really
every year.
Does. Really,
it
really
doesn't
nuts.
Make any sense.
Not at all. Because it's just assuming that these casts aren't worth recognizing.
Do you think sometimes that I think that sometimes that they don't want to also add the supporting categories because I feel like they sort of think the SAG Awards are like a huge, you know, one of the it's usually the last televised award show before the Oscars, really. But and it's such like a everyone is always like, you know, have to wait for SAG. SAG is the biggest, you know, voting branch, blah blah blah. But do you think sometimes they think that they don't want it to be more about TV than they do about movies? I think that's
interesting.
Sometimes.
I never thought about that, but that's interesting.
Could be, could very well be.
Because now the like the number of categories are still are sort of balanced. So I don't know.
Well, there's more categories on the TV side than film side.
Yeah, but I mean, like, maybe if they added, like, more supporting categories for TV and they added, like,
Then it would just be way out of line.
It would be, like, you know, yeah, 5 movie awards, like, 12 TV awards. Yeah.
Well, people tune in for the movie awards.
Yeah.
Anyway, starting with the limited series race, we have Mark Ruffalo winning again for I Know This Much Is True. Nothing really to comment on there. This is, I think, the last award he can win for this role, unless he's nominated for an MTV award, which I would find that hard to believe.
Best cutting off your arm in the opening scene.
That is totally a
nail bite race.
And Anya Taylor-Joy won for The Queen's Gambit in a female actor in a television movie or limited series. Jalal, I don't know if either one of you has read his post today, summarizing the awards and commenting on that. Jalal makes a very interesting statement that he's getting the sense that people are getting tired of The Queen's Gambit and that may be what happens to Netflix's limited series that they premiere in the fall and they just can't seem to get over the goal line. And maybe that happened to the Queen's Gambit, you know, people may get tired of it.
But then they have not gotten tired of Schitt's Creek, which I thought that they would.
Yep.
But at this point.
Very true.
Yeah. But that is interesting.
But I mean, right now there's not really anybody, you know, I don't think Nicole Kidman can give her any kind of threat for The Undoing. If anybody could, it's the I Must Destroy You. Michaela.
I May Destroy You.
May Destroy You. Yeah. Michaela. I don't remember her last name. Cole.
Cole. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think that's she stands a chance if she gets nominated, which I assume that she will be. But we do have two. We have, her genius Aretha airing currently, or just that recently aired. And then we've got Kate Winslet in Mare of, mm-hmm. of Easttown, which is going to be a point of competition. Plus, it's HBO having a limited series at the tail end of the year, which they are successful at. So we'll see. Moving on to comedy, actually open it back up. Did anybody else want to comment on anything on limited series?
No.
No, I do think I have been seeing some stuff on it. I mean, it's just Twitter, so who knows. People saying that they don't understand what the big deal about The Queen's Gambit is. So I feel like maybe the period of it being quiet for a little bit now that there's, you know, a big chunk of time between that and the Emmys, maybe the quietness will calm people down. I don't know.
Right, because this is really the only thing. SAG was like the last TV focused award before, I guess, TCAs in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I would see the Queen's Gambit doing well there.
Yeah.
Comedy, Schitt's Creek, Catherine O'Hara won. But Jason Sudeikis won again for a male actor in a comedy series. I feel like that award is pretty much sewed up. Like,
yeah.
Ted Lasso is going to win comedy. Ted Lasso is going to win male actor, maybe supporting actress.
And he's also managed to turn his terrible Golden Globes speech into kind of like a, oh, what hoodie is he going to wear now? What sweater is he going to wear? Like, he had a sweater that said, like, my body, my choice last night.
Yeah.
And I just thought, oh, it's now become like a, he's turned something that could be a disaster into, now you're like, oh, I want to see what he's going to wear.
Well, he's not high anymore.
That's true, too.
I'm allegedly. 100%
I mean, I guess
he was allegedly high.
I think he was too, but that's okay. That's okay. He was overseas. He's, you know, dealing with a divorce kind of thing going on. I get it.
Joey, what were you going to say?
Nothing. He was stoned. What? I have nothing more to add to that. No.
What's interesting is that, you know, the Schitt's Creek dominance has kind of blinded us to who could be the main contender for the actress in a comedy series race for the for Emmys this year. And I'm wondering if it's just going to default, but I wonder if it's going to be somebody like Tracy Ellis Ross.
Yeah. I don't know. The reason why I picked Kaylee Cuoco, I still think she's really great in The Flight Attendant, but I also just wanted, I figured that Catherine O'Hara was going to win, but I just wanted to pick her to be different. And like, but I do wonder if it'll shift now. I feel like, you know, this was the last one of the awards that Schitt's Creek can get, right? And yeah. I think that, you know, it's going to be interesting now to see where they go from here. Because I do think Kaylee Cuoco has been around forever, and I just feel like there's a lot of I could have seen her winning the SAG just because I feel like she has a lot of respect from actors for being around for so long, and like this is kind of like a role that is different for her.
Yeah,
you right.
I'm really annoying about it. Till that.
Would you say?
You know, I'm gonna be real annoying about that. I'm gonna.
Oh, you annoying?
What? over a strong female lead in a niche comedy? What? I don't know. So, yeah.
But I assume that you both agree that Ted Lasso is going to dominate in the fall.
Yes, and I'm here for it.
I need to finish it. I just, I keep getting distracted by new things.
Yeah, I understand.
Drama won. Well, what the most predictable award of the night was that Netflix would take home female actress in a dramedy and a female actor in a drama series because all of the nominees were from Netflix shows.
Yes,
but
we had some write-in votes, and I'm sorry, it went to someone at CBS.
But Gillian Anderson won that for The Crown, which I would say if it was ever in doubt that she's going to win the supporting actress Emmy, I mean, the fact that she won over the leads of the show makes me think she's absolutely going to win the Emmy.
Yeah.
Jason Bateman won a surprise second Screen Actors Guild trophy for Ozark.
It made me think, though, I know you don't watch, both of you don't watch Ozark, but he does have a really intense, the scene actually they showed for his clip is a really intense scene and a really intense episode. So I kind of, because I always think of it as Laura Linney's show, I mean, even though, like, you know, Jason Bateman's great in everything he does. But that was a particularly strong episode and a really intense scene.
Yes.
So he's well-deserved, I think, even though, you know, there was a lot of great other actors in that category.
And plus, people just love him.
Yeah.
I mean, they
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say they gave him such a pass over some of that stuff that was going down with Arrested Development.
Right. He's got a great podcast too called Smartless with Will Arnett and Sean Hayes. Mm-hmm. And I love it. I listen to it every Monday. And it's really good. And, you know, that's a way to, you know, I'm not saying that SAG voters are listening, but you know, he's out there doing a bunch of things. I was trying to remember, you know, he was in The Outsider last year doing that crazy role that was terrifying and doing Ozark. He's really, I think there's a lot of respect there for him too, since, you know, he was a child actor on Silver Spoons and then kind of like disappeared for a little bit, then it came back with Arrested Development and is just not left, and he's just everywhere and he just keeps getting better.
And he's really good at picking roles that are well suited to him and stretching mm-hmm. himself with something like The Outside.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And The Crown won Ensemble in a Drama Series. Again, engrave the Emmy right now, unless Succession comes up with like a May 31st premiere.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
It would have to be before May 31st because this, I guess they changed the hanging, I want to say hanging Chad, but the hanging.
I know, the hanging Chad.
You do have to premiere most of your show before the end of the eligibility season.
HBO is just going to be we're going to drop 5 episodes.
Yeah.
When is Ozark season 4 coming?
I don't know. It's not
I
this.
I've seen things about it that like people, I think like fan-made posters that were like coming the end of March. I'm like, well, that can't be right. Like, so I was wondering, I don't know exactly when.
I don't think they've started to premiere it.
They might be because he's in Atlanta. Jason Bateman's in Atlanta right now. And I don't know if that's like, I mean, I know they probably film usually around the Ozarks, but I wasn't sure if he was down there doing something related to the show.
It's the last season of the show, and it is not premiering in April. So I'm wondering if they're just going to hold it because if it's the last season, why would they premiere it in May and have The Crown just.
Right. That's true. That's a good point.
I don't think Netflix, I think Netflix wants to win some major award somewhere, sometime.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on to the film awards, we had a quote unquote surprise win by Yoon Jung Yao from Minari, which is, I was thrilled to see her win. That is the story of the year that I think makes my heart, my cold, cold heart grow. Two sizes.
She's so good, and her speech was so.
Yeah, it was really sweet.
It was really sweet. Who doesn't want to see more of that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to see someone win when they don't expect it, and when they're not like engineered and orchestrated to win it. Like this was a genuine performance, and a woman that did not expect to enter the Oscar race with this performance. Like she was just acting, and she was doing. Yeah. Fucking job she could, and she's amazing. And I love it.
Yeah.
And a lot of other actors were happy that she won. If you watched that, Glenn Close was thrilled.
Yeah, she looked so excited. Her and Olivia Colman were like beaming.
Absolutely. So I think this is a good bet for Oscar.
Yeah. I don't know. I would love to see that. I think the SAG, the SAG stat, usually whoever wins SAG wins the Oscars, is a really confident thing to go with. But I still am a little like shaky on that cat. Maybe I think Best Actress is even crazier. So,
although Viola Davis looked very surprised.
That reaction, dear God, as the kids say, will live rent free in my brain.
I liked somebody synced it up with the Lady Gaga. Chromatica. Yes, I loved it. Dun, 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 dun. I was like, yes.
That was great.
So Viola Davis won actor in a leading role. This is probably the most competitive category, I think, at the Oscars because no one has won more than one award for this, for one of the major precursors. So that's and some of them haven't won any.
Don't you think it'd be kind of crazy if whoever wins, if Frances McDormand loses BAFTA, she'll be like, say Vanessa Kirby wins, which I'm kind of hoping for. I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm kind of hoping that Vanessa Kirby wins Best Actress at BAFTA, because then the only person who hasn't won a major award is it's kind of nuts that she's not great, but I'm just saying it'd be kind of nuts if it's Frances McDormand who is going to, in a Best Picture nominee, is probably going to win Best Picture, Best Director, but I mean, she'll at least win producing Oscars, so that's good.
Right. So I know, Megan, you've been on Twitter with your proclamation, and you're not the only one, of course, that you're putting your money behind Audra Day.
Yeah, I just think, I don't know. I just have a weird feeling. Like I said, I keep going back to Marion Cotillard with mm-hmm. LaVie and Rose, and also they love to give actresses that have played real life people awards, you know, Oscars for that.
Madonna would like a word, please.
I know. She's probably like, excuse me. But I don't know. I also think that this isn't just a, oh, let's just give it to somebody who plays an act or plays a musician. This is a really strong performance. So I was like blown away by like I said, we don't talk enough about how this is this woman's like basically her first role, like mm-hmm. in a film. That's amazing. So yeah, that's kind of, that's where I'm putting my money right now. I don't have any money in this, but if I did have money, Monopoly money.
If you come to my party, you'll have $5.
That's right. You always make people do that. Just so I can throw.
People. It's voluntary.
Yes, you do. So I have to throw away $5, basically.
It's not my fault that I just do the best and I throw this party.
You also, though, will make predictions, and I try to line them up, mine up with yours, and then you change them all at the last second. So then you fuck me over.
Yeah, remember that year I tied with you, Joey?
Yeah, it was very. It was a hard year, though.
I skipped supporting male actor in a supporting role, but Daniel Kaluuya has been just walking away with good. This is he's going to win.
I still don't know about. I'm still wondering if Lakeith is going to draw votes away, because there is also a lot of people love that role too. I think that hurts him, and I hate to say that, but I think they both like deserve to win. I think they're both amazing. But I'd also love to see Paul Raci win. Like, that's such a great category.
Yeah, that's a good category.
Yeah, if Paul Raci wins, I wonder if that's a sign that Riz Ahmed could win.
See, I think Chadwick Boseman is probably the biggest lock.
Yeah,
I don't know. But I would love to see Riz win, too. I would love to see, there's just a lot of good people nominated this year.
A lot of very diverse performances.
Yeah.
And then the big award of the evening, outstanding performance by cast and motion picture, went to Trial of the Chicago 7.
And I saw some people complaining about that, which I think that it was the best ensemble. Like, it's a great ensemble, really. Like, and you know, I'm not like the biggest, that's not my favorite movie of the year, but I think that the actors worked together so well in that film. I mean, you can't deny that. Even if you hate the movie, like the ensemble is just like actually watching them all get the, I'm like, oh, that's right. He was in this too. Oh, he's great in this. You know, they're all great in it.
I do think some people, I mean, that's not my, it's, I don't know. I don't really like that movie very much. I can understand why people like that movie. It's just not for me. I feel like people sort of willingly misunderstand like good ensemble versus like best picture sometimes.
Yeah.
And ensemble doesn't just mean that it's just a whole bunch of people in the same space acting together, which I have seen some people argue that's all that Chicago 7 is. But I think there's a good balance in that movie, and I can see why it won. I would have voted for something else personally, but yeah, that's all. That's all. But I don't think it's a bad winner for that specific kind of category.
Right. I think it's a good winner.
What's really interesting is that the last, like, it doesn't often happen that DGA, SAG, and PGA go to different films. I think the last time this happened was the year Big Short won the PGA, and Spotlight won the SAG. And what won the DGA that year?
The Revenant.
Was it The Revenant?
Wasn't it Alejandro?
Or I was going to say it was him, but I was like, was it Gravity or was it? It was The Revenant. And the ultimate winner of the Oscar went to the one that won the SAG. The actors carried it home. And assuming that Chloe Zhao wins, you know, director, I don't see anybody winning that other than her. So it's interesting. This is going to be another one of those years. So will the actors carry this home?
We'll find out.
Whoa.
Is it April 25th, right? Is it April 25th?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. 20 days.
Joey's got that tattooed on his wrist somewhere.
They haven't started voting yet.
They haven't started voting?
They started voting in 10 days. They start on the 15th.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I'm so tired, guys.
This is the longest Oscar year I've ever experienced.
Remember when it was at the end of March? And it was like, this is forever. Then we're like,
home a beer.
The end of March was last week.
No, I'm just saying, like, normally the, like, you know, we'll just want another 20 fucking days. But I mean, like, normally the, like, early 2000s was like March 26th. And by like mid February, everybody was like, can't we fix this? And then
I was
like, fine. Why couldn't the Oscars have been in April the year that I went to Rochester so I wouldn't have fallen knee deep into a bank of snow?
Yeah.
That was really funny. That was, I mean, it was funny.
No, it was hilarious. It was hilarious because I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm just flopping around like a fish out of water, literally. All right. Anything else on the Screen Actors Guild Awards? Next weekend, we have DGAs, which is going to Chloe Zhao. Just spoiler alert.
Next week is Chloe Zhao's DGA Awards.
Yeah. I mean, come on. It's not going to be – anyway, it's not going to be anybody else. There's no reason to even talk about it. It's been her all year.
So no podcast next week.
Okay. So, Joey, why don't you take us down the Made for Love aisle?
Sure. Made for Love is a new series from HBO Max. It is based on a book by Alyssa Nutting, who she also helped do. I mean, she's a producer on the show. I think she helped develop it. Excuse me. It stars Krista Milioti and Billy Magnussen as a couple who live in sort of a like tech utopia almost called The Hub. And you basically, the main crux of the story is you find out that Krista Milioti's character, Hazel Green Google, which that doesn't sound like anything. I don't know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. She finds out that her husband, Byron Google, who was this big media mogul, magnet, hot, he's shirtless a lot. That's all I care about. You find out that he has sort of implanted a chip in her brain, you know, to a sort of an experiment to have couples' minds become one. So he basically knocked her out and put a chip in her brain so he can follow her every move, essentially. And so he did it as sort of a, you know, the next step in his empire. And we soon find out that not everyone, you know, is really on board for this. I mean, obviously most, Krista Milioti's character, Hazel. HBO Max dropped 3 episodes on April 1st. It is an interesting show. it's sort of really absurd and darkly comedic. I like the whole cast. It's Krista Milioti, Billy Magnussen, Noma Dumezweni as a character with the best name, Fiffany. And Ray Romano's in it with a sex doll. How do you say his name? Bacadol, who, if you liked him on Veep, he's, you know, nice and slimy again and keeps getting hurt in this show. I watched the first episode twice. The first time I watched it, I thought the pace was really weird. I don't like that I'm saying this, but I feel like the most fascinating character so far is Billy Magnussen's character, because I don't know what is real and I don't know what is artifice. I mean, you can sort of see like when he's trying to manipulate her, when he's trying to get what he wants. I mean, she's on the run with a chip in her brain, and he's following her. And he's, I mean, as one of the other characters says, she's the most valuable piece of equipment that he has right now. But I feel like there's, like, sort of a thread of, like, like, little boy lost, almost, with his character that I find really fascinating. When he plays sort of characters against type of his, like, dashing leading man quality, like, when he plays an asshole, I think it's very interesting. And he's an asshole in this. He was an asshole in Maniac a couple years ago on Netflix. So I think I'm going to agree with something that Megan's going to bring up later. It was sort of a weird in for me getting into it, but now that I've seen all three episodes, I'm a little bit more interested in to see more. So anybody else want to jump in on that?
I'll jump in. I agree with what you said. Well, I think that, first of all, Kristen Milioti is just great in everything she does.
Yeah, exactly.
I am worried she's going to get typecast, though, as... Like, I even at points I thought, is this a prequel to... Is this her character in Palm Springs, but, like, a prequel to what happened to her before to getting to that point? You know, I feel like, you know, she's kind of got this niche right now of romantic comedies in the desert, I feel like. She's really great. The cast is really great. I felt like... You're right. The pacing was weird in the beginning. You want to, when you're doing a show about marriage, I feel like, and you have to kind of know something about what made them get married to begin with. Mm-hmm. You know, our first interaction between them is him going down on her, which, okay, fine. But then, like, so you see that she's miserable, but you don't know why. And but the third episode is, I think they should have started there. Yeah, they should have started there, just introducing us to, like, oh, she met him and got married in the same day. That's interesting. You know, she's been stuck in there for 10 years and she hasn't been on the outside. Like, that's interesting. All of these things that you really don't get from, I thought the second episode was probably the weakest, where she's kind of running around the bar. Mm-hmm. I just was like, I have no idea what's going on right now. And Ray Romano's character, I don't get that. How does he go from, like, kind of an alcoholic to being in love with a sex doll? It just seems like that was a big leap. Like, there was no kind of linear, like, oh, this, we could see this coming, I felt like. And then the mom's Dione Sky, and then she disappears and is dead. So it just was like, oh, okay. There's a lot of jumping around, but I thought the third episode really sets the tone for what I think they want to do, which is be like this satire on marriage. But also they finally play around with her, with him, you know, being in her brain, basically. Because which I thought that, yeah, that's the whole point of this show, is this concept that you know, you've got this amazing concept that they don't use until really the third episode, I'd say.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I just want to jump in.
I'm sorry.
No. It's okay. I just wanted to get in and say I agree with most of everything that you guys have said. I do want to talk about Ray Romano, but you're absolutely right in that they don't use the conceit of she's got this chip in her head and he can see and he can see everything and hear everything that she's seeing. And the way that she turns that on him at the end of that third episode is brilliant. Yeah.
Yes.
Fantastic.
I love the sort of like needle drop when she goes, thank you. And she just walks away. That was fucking great.
Yeah. Because you think that she's going to do, because you think she's going to do one thing. You think she's going to get like a revenge fuck or something like that.
Yeah. That's what I thought. Yeah.
But she's totally not doing that. She's not compromising her integrity to do that. She is using that guy. And it's fantastic. I think it's the best thing in the show by far.
And yeah. I think it's interesting that they introduce in the first episode that you don't really hear anyone else talk about it, when Noma says to one of the other characters when they're you know, they're at that launch party and he's like, we're gonna do it, and she's like, that's impossible, one of them will die. I sort of like how they don't hammer that in. They sort of like drop it and like walk away from it. But it the third episode is, I think, the best one. I wonder, was she on a game show? Is it a Married at First Sight situation? Like, I do agree with Megan that I really wish they would have started with maybe a little bit more mystery around it a little bit. I don't know.
Right. It's very straightforward in the beginning. It's just like, okay, you've got to like, I think it would have been cool if like it cut to, first of all, I want to make a shout out to Niyasha Hitendi, casual alum who plays the guy who's in interviewing them. I was like, oh my God, it's Leon. So when he, when like they kind of have another moment where, you know, oh, we've got this perfect life. Would you ever have the chip in your head? And she's kind of like, and then I think like shortly after that, the scene is her trying to kill herself in the pool. If that's their first episode there, I think like that's, I was like, oh, this is great. Cause you knew that even though we knew that she had done this, but it still was like, oh, well, how does she get out? That I thought was so awesome. The way they cut that where it was like, okay, here's her happy. And here's her trying to kill herself in the pool.
But like, wouldn't it have been like a really sort of cool thing if they would have ended the first episode with, I'm sorry, the fucking dolphin, showing her the way, like, what if, like, right, the end was just the door opening in the pool and you sort of don't know where it leads, and like, or maybe it cuts to like the end of the first episode is her, you know going through that hatch, which is the opening shot of the first episode.
Absolutely. I kept thinking about how actually the story here is pretty interesting, but you just need to like editing, moving things around and like playing around with the way you reveal things. Because like, I was just like, okay, she's got a chip in her head. She escaped. I mean, she escapes within like the first, 5 seconds, I think, or something. Right. Is that like the opening scene?
Yeah.
So you're kind of like, okay, but like, I don't know, jumping around, but like grounding them in some sort of, here's their marriage. This is how they met. This is kind of getting a sense of their dynamic. Cause I really have no sense of their dynamic in the beginning, but they definitely have a weird, like one that a weird chemistry that is interesting to play off of. So I appreciated seeing that in the third episode.
And the thing about it is this is going to be 10 episodes long. If there's going to be any, and I don't know, I have the next 3 episodes. I just haven't watched them yet. If there's going to be any sort of instance where she genuinely reconsiders going back with him, we, as of right now, we don't have that information. And it's going to be, as an audience member, it's going to be really hard to like have us go on this uphill climb with her to understand why she would do that. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I'm just saying that if it does.
Well, I also kind of like the way this show talks about like abusive relationships. I thought I feel like there's commentary that more of the show could make, like even about, you know, I'm sure Clarence is going to say something about this, but Ray Romano's character, like the fact that he finds satisfaction with a doll more than a person. I feel like that there is so interesting and speaks to so much of what I think some of the themes could be in this show, but I don't know if they are going to go there.
Yeah, what were you going to say about Ray Romano?
I really don't like him in this. It's not his performance. I really don't like the character. I really don't like where it's going with the sex doll. I don't think it. I need it to tie in, right? I agree with you, Megan. It probably is going in that direction. I hope it is, because that would make sense. But I hope it's not just a quirky thing that he does, right, and that's all it is, because I will absolutely despise it for that.
It came out of nowhere. When that happens, it's like, wait, what? The last time we saw him, he was drinking moonshine, you know, and was spraying water on her.
It's like, I wonder if...
I'm with the sex doll.
I wonder if it's going to go more into like grief and depression with this character. Because, like, there's that really sad, like, scene where, like, obviously she, you know, when they do the flashback and she finds him drunk, that's obviously a result of his wife dying.
Right.
But I wonder if, like, I also thought it was weird, and I sort of was just like, please tell me it's like you're so heartbroken, you don't want to be around another person, so the only person that you want to be around is, like, an inanimate person. Like, there's
but
no
that's
one
not
else.
It, cause he says that the sex with her mom wasn't that great anyway.
No, like, it had gotten boring before she got cancer.
Well, maybe that's just the sex part. Maybe he doesn't want to deal with like another real emotional connection with another person because he I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe. I'm hoping that's what it is, because I was kind of like, I only Sky.
And I was like, why? I was like, you're going to be in this for 5 minutes? You better be in this more.
I know. I was like, where'd she go? When she said mom's dead or your mom is dead, somebody said that to her. I was like, wait, what did I miss? When did this happen?
And also, why are kids such assholes? Like, I know. Like, Jesus Christ. Like,
well, it's, I'm not going to judge, you know, Romano's character or his performance until we see the end of it. But right now, yeah. I'm like, ugh. To me, I agree with you, Joey, about Billy Magnussen. But Magnussen, is that, am I saying that right? Sorry, yeah. I feel like I'm missing syllable.
Slap.
Yeah. Kristen Milioti, I think, is just fantastic in this. Like, I really like her. Her character.
She's always good. She's just a underrated actress.
And I want to see more of Noma Dumitru. Yeah.
Yes.
There's like some really awesome clothes.
Well, I love how I thought when Noma was talking about Zelda in the beginning, how Zelda's not happy. I thought that was Kristen's character. Mm-hmm. This is like the very first thing they say. And here you find out that's the dolphin.
Yeah.
I thought that was really funny. Like, oh, when they was like, this is Zelda the dolphin. I'm like, oh, that's who was unhappy is Zelda.
Yeah. There's a, I don't know. There's something like, I know, like, he's a Billy's character. Byron is sort of like, you know, he's obviously a manipulative asshole dick and we shouldn't care about, you know, we're in a place where we don't like, we're sort of sticking it to characters like that, you know, abusive, manipulative characters like that. But there's something that he brings to it that I think is really interesting about, like, there's that scene where she throws him a birthday party and he just looks like a little boy. And I thought it was just really sad. And that obviously that's not an excuse for his behavior or anything. I don't want anyone to say that, but it's just sort of like, I don't know. I feel like he's doing something with the character that I think is interesting. And they have this conversation in the third episode where, you know, she's like, I hate the hub and I want to, you know, this is why it's bad. And he's just like, okay, we'll change this. We'll change that. And part of me was just like, I know you're just trying to get her back. And you're, you know, she's like, you know, there's a piece of your tech property in her head, but there's part of me that was just like, something about it is, like, not genuine, but part of me is just like, I don't think it's all just trying to manipulate her for some reason. There's something like really sad and hurt there that I thought was. Yeah.
You have to assume that there's something in his past where he doesn't trust someone that he's put emotional investment in, and he doesn't know how to deal with the real world. So that's why he lives in this, you know, perfect bubble or perfect cube. And that's why he puts the chip in her head, because he can't trust her. Because someone has broken his heart before, I assume.
Yeah. He's really good at playing an asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It helps when he looks like an 80s villain and he's like shirtless 20% of the show. So that's it.
So, Megan, I'll pose a question to you. Do you think that this is maybe Kristen Milioti's breakthrough role where she finally gets an Emmy nomination? A major Emmy nomination.
I think she's been
nominated before, but
I don't know. I'm not sure. It'll have to see how this, where the story goes and everything. But I mean, she should have had so many other, but you're right, breakout roles. I still think she was the best thing about How I Met Your Mother. But who knows? I think she's got a bigger role coming for her. I feel like she's something's got to give. I don't know if it's this one though.
She does not have an Emmy nomination. I would have sworn she got an Emmy nomination for her her role.
Oh, USS Callister.
No, 30 Rock. Guest actress in 30 Rock.
Oh, my God.
She was so good, yeah.
That is one of my favorite. That's one of my, people talk about, like, you know, performances that don't get nominated.
Yeah.
But, oh, God, that's one of my favorite performances for the entirety of that show.
that performance, that role, her performance in that just shook me. She was so great. Like, I'm like, immediately had to look up and see who this person was, because she was fantastic. But I don't know, we'll see. It's not a strong year for comedy actresses at this point, so maybe she does get in. We'll see.
All right.
All right. Yeah. Anything else?
No.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move to the flash forward to the media that we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. And if you guys don't mind, I will go first because I rarely do. All right. So I watched one trash movie last week, which was Godzilla vs. Kong. And I loved the crap out of it because it was stupid as hell. Like, I've never seen a movie more where I've been more annoyed at the humans that are speaking. And all I wanted to see was just monsters beat the crap out of each other. The characters aren't even characters. They're just terrible. There's like one. Rebecca Hall is the only one that's even trying to give a performance in there. But it's free on HBO Max, and that is the best possible thing I can say about it. I had a blast watching it. It is a terrible, terrible movie, but it was exactly, it does something at the end that I did not expect, and both my son and I were floored by that. It brings a classic Godzilla character into the mix. I won't spoil it, but I was having a good time with it.
I bought a ticket to that to see it yesterday, and then I didn't want to go, so I refund. But I kind of want to go see that in the theater just because it's a stupid, loud, dumb movie, and I just want to sit there and gorge on popcorn while I watch it.
I miss that.
Yeah.
So this week's trash movie is going to be The New Mutants, which comes out on HBO on Saturday. And I cannot wait.
You should not watch that.
Yes. I just very quickly, I did want to mention that I also caught up to the Tina Turner documentary, which is tremendous. I could not recommend this more highly.
I've been wanting to watch it. I just haven't had a chance to yet.
Yeah. So,
it's really interesting that the first half is sort of a standard sort of biopic kind of thing where you're just kind of getting the notes like she did this happened to her. But then in the last 45 minutes, it becomes so heartbreaking and so real. And you really start to understand who this woman, Tina Turner, is in a way that I don't think anybody ever could.
Wow.
I love Tina Turner.
And it made me want a sequel to What's Love Got to Do with It. Starring Angela Bassett, playing Tina Turner in her older years.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
So
that'd be great.
There's a lot of material there. But also this week, I am going to catch up to screeners from Netflix. Two screeners. I got Shadow and Bone, which I'm interviewing the composer for on Friday. I think this is based on a book. It seems like it is. And The Mitchells versus the Machines. So,
what is that?
I don't even know what that is.
It's Netflix's latest animated film.
Never mind.
Oh, cool.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah. So,
huzzah.
Hopefully it's better than that other one. Sorry, Joey. All right. Megan.
Okay. I am excited for Chad on TBS that starts as this podcast drops tonight. And it's so good. I think Nassim Pedrad is entering the Emmy race, I think. And I just love this show so much. And I will be beating the drum for this show throughout the whole Emmy season. And it's premiering at a good time. Everybody should watch it. It's just really delightful. Other things, I'm watching The Challenge All Stars on Paramount Plus, which has been great. The first episode was awesome. I'm still watching The Challenge on MTV. I'm watching Floribama Shore. I am watching, I guess that's it for that. Oh, I am also been watching Leah Remini's Scientology in the Aftermath, which I'm obsessed with. And it's I started watching that on Netflix. I also started watching Bridgerton, and I'm about halfway through. So I'm getting to know that I'm really sad that Reggae is not coming back. I don't know how he's not coming back. He's the best thing about the show. Also, Friday, Doing the Most with Phoebe Robinson is going to premiere at 11 o'clock on Comedy Central. And I love Phoebe Robinson from Two Dope Queens. And this just looks like a fun show where she's like hanging with like Kevin Bacon and Whitney Cummings and doing shit. And it just looks like fun.
I have seen that the trailer for that. It looks fun.
Yeah, I just thought it looked like a fun show. And I think, let's see what else. Is there anything else that I wanted to do? I just finished a book called The Liar's Girl by, hold on, I want to get her name right. Katherine Ryan Howard, and it was like a murder mystery that I. But now I'm gonna get a new book, so that's about it. That's what I'm doing.
But Joey, before we go to you, I do want to say that I think I kind of agree with you, Megan, that reggae did not return to Bridgerton. I don't think it's because of the Bond rumor. I think he didn't return because he doesn't want to be tied down to a property that is going to collapse in his second season when nobody cares about these characters.
Well, I also think, like, if they're – no offense to reggae, but if they're going to pick a Bond that's going to be a Bond of color, they're going to go with somebody who's more
They're
going to
go with Idris Elba.
Yeah. Everybody said that. Even I told my dad. He's like, they're going to go with Idris Elba if they're going to do that.
Yeah, I mean
– And, like – It's a nice thought, but I think you're probably right. I think he just wanted to do once. I mean, he only signed up to do one season. It was a one season contract, so it's not like this was really a surprise to them.
Well, I read the description of the second book, and essentially it just focuses on the brother finding his love match. And
which one? The one who
the one that it was his best friend. I don't remember.
Oh, okay. I guess
it focuses on him.
I guess Sienna and him are not going to end up together.
I don't know. I'm going to watch it this week.
Well, I don't know. I'm speculating. I haven't finished it.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, Phoebe, whatever her last name is, she's not a main character in the second season. She's just there to help him. Like, the focus completely shifts over to him.
Oh, people are not going to like that at all.
No, I agree. That's why I think it's going to collapse in the second season.
Mm.
So anyway, Joey.
I'm also looking forward to Chad, dying to see Chad. I'm determined to watch Bridgerton this week. We got our home gym is coming together, and we finally got the TV mounted on the wall, and I'm excited to get on the elliptical and watch TV while I'm on it. Give me an excuse to stay on the elliptical for longer than I anticipated to. So I'm looking forward to those two shows. I have screeners to Them, Lena Waithe's Them, which I think drops on Friday on Amazon. And I'm going to be interviewing the composer of that new Netflix movie, Stowaway, with Toni Collette and Anna Kendrick. So I'm going to try to watch that this week. And the show that I have screeners for that I just got that I'm so excited to watch is season two of Special with Ryan O'Connell, which it's the second season. It's going to be longer episodes, so it's going to be... I think they're longer episodes. I think I heard that that they are going to be competing in the main categories this year, because last time it was in the short form categories, because the episodes were 15, 18 minutes long. So just expect to hear me and Jalal just talk about the show for an entire year, because we are both really big fans of it. So I'm looking forward to that too. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
All right. So does that cover it?
Yeah.
All right, let's get the hell out of here. So we are the 3Ms contributors, Joey Moser, Megan McLaughlin, and me, Clarence Moy. Thanking you for joining us, asking you to remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find us, and wishing you a very pleasant tomorrow.